so many dogs out here.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Inner and Outer Reality, In Reality and Outside. I'm your host, Sean Penalver, and with us today we have...
V. Ramos.
V. Ramos. So, V, the broadest question to start off with, what do you think the meaning of life or existence is?
Oh, man. I think in its simplest definition, the meaning of life is to connect.
And be present. Yeah.
Well, and I think how we connect is different for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it does require us to be present with the thing, the person, the place, whatever,
yeah.
Right? And I feel that, well, I believe that that's life, is to connect.
Yeah, so, for example, what that made me think of is, like, you take magnets. You take a pair of magnets. You put them together. It depends on the side that they're facing, you know, whether it attracts or reflects. But being humans and conscious, like, if we ever are in that point of opposition or attraction, it's like you still have to be there in that moment to connect,
mm-hmm.
whether you're feeling either of those forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think connecting leads us to feeling empowered and inspired and gives us the ability to co-create things for each other or for other people or, you know, for other living things.
Yeah.
And I think that as soon as you stop connecting with anyone or anything or any place, you stop living.
Oh, wow. The way I would relate that... So you've heard me talk about my funk theory and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so since we are all literally results of funk, like everything that we exist within, that is funk. And we are each mm-hmm. units of funk. That's basically you choosing to disconnect from this funk and these powers and such. And then, like, once you start doing that, yeah, you still, like, live. You're still here and existing. But, like, are you, like you said, you're not connecting. You're no longer, like, feeding the funk. And the funk, as I would say, wants you to feed it. It is wanting to learn and educate itself and everything within it. Because, I don't know, I think that us being an experience, we're experiencing everything. And so it's like the past, present, and future. We're the past moving through the present as we become the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in that constant state. We're always the present. But I just lost my train of thought.
The present is life.
Yeah. You are always in it. Oh, and so we're always this expanding moment, but we are expanding into the future, which is this thing that already is happening. We're just not there yet. We're progressing into it. And so, oh my gosh, there's so much going on. I can't keep my train of thought. But I don't know, like...
I think I like that, how you said we are the past living in the present, expanding into the future,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like the future is being created as we're living in the present.
Yeah, and at every little plank second, like mm-hmm. the smallest measurement
yep.
that we can find, it's literally frames of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always in that, moving into these futures. And that's when I would say that's when predeterminism and free will split. I think that is kind of a Schrodinger's paradox, that every plank second, that us right now, we're in this moment, and technically 13.8 billion years have passed to get us to this moment, evolution and everything. And so now that we're in this moment, or anyone's in any moment, we are both choosing what to do next,
mm-hmm.
but also it has been almost predetermined. And so, and it's in every variable too, like literally... I would argue that, like, at one point in our multiverse, like, we both just start floating. But we're not experiencing that, you and
right.
I. Another surreality is. And all of those branch together, and they intersect, you know, divide throughout time and space and other dimensions. But ours is this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Also, the thing that really gets to me about living and life is color. I don't know if that's ever something that you ever stop to think about deeply.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, outside of us, there is no color.
Oh, so that's a fascinating thought, because humans are just prediction machines, and our brains have just evolved to show us what we see. And so something that I'd like to talk about with people is the color blue. Mm-hmm. And so in ancient history, there was no record of the word blue or the color blue. The people would just describe the oceans or the sky as a deep wine color. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the word blue came about, or whatever, you know, language mm-hmm. blue was, that people were actually starting to see blue. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, violet, blue is right there at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so it is very likely that humans just haven't evolved yet to see the next color after blue and violet.
Right.
Because there are animals and there are insects that do see these other colors. They see ultraviolet colors or anything and such. And so what I'm trying to do with funk theory is essentially open us up to all these words and ideas, because by doing that, by even thinking of it or proposing these ideas, that gets us closer to finding these words of blue and being able to see blue or experience blue mm-hmm. or what's next.
Yeah.
And so I am very curious, like, if one day just, like, your kid, imagine your kid can see another color.
That you can't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how that experience would be, because it's like, you can't, it would be almost impossible to describe, you know? There'd
yeah,
be no way to, like...
how do you describe something that no one has ever seen before?
Yeah. Or experienced. I think that where that comes into play is, now that we have sciences coming into brain-to-brain communication, like Neuralink and such, I think we're going to reach the point, or at least I hope that we reach the point, where with brain-to-brain communication... literally, like, we would just understand each other. You wouldn't even need to know a language. You would just understand the thoughts that you're having, because you're able to experience someone else's brain mm-hmm. as they are experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are scared because it invades privacy, you know.
Well, I was just about to say, have you seen that show called Modern Love?
Uh-uh.
It's about that. It's
Whoa.
Essentially a couple, and the husband implements a chip into her brain, into the wife's brain, and he gets to see and hear and experience everything that she is, and he uses it to control her and hold her hostage, right?
Men.
And, like, threaten her. And she's, like, trying for dear life to, like, figure out how to get this chip out of her head, but he's, like, this silicon tech,
yeah.
you know...
And I think that's where it would go wrong, is capitalism or whatever, uh-huh. people taking advantage of it.
And so he's, like, listening and watching everything that she's trying to do, and he's, like, angry that she just doesn't want to be with him and just, like, go back to him because she escaped and ran away.
It's never going to be the same after that.
No. I was like, oh, this is terrible.
But imagine a world where that is something that we all do. We would be able to... Now, not to that level, because he has advantage over her because he can see everything in her mind, but not vice versa, correct?
Right.
But if we were all able to do that, we would even see when people were manipulating us, because instantly the entire world would know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would just be like, oh, how dare you think of that person?
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm thinking if that were to happen... there wouldn't be room for deceit or struggle or pain, because we would constantly be in a state of understanding and empathizing with people.
I think that is a utopia.
I mean, that sounds great.
Right? Yeah.
And there are still people who are sociopaths.
Yes.
Right?
And that's who are against that. But again, even with those sociopaths... if we were able to understand what's going on in their head, who's to say that, like, you couldn't talk
right.
on a different level?
Okay, yeah. Or, like, maybe we would just be convinced to become sociopaths with them.
Yeah, right, because
and
they're so crazy.
And we would all just be sociopaths
yeah.
because we would be so empathetic towards them.
Oh, my gosh,
but
yeah.
But then they wouldn't evolve past sociopaths. They would just stay sociopaths.
Or get worse.
And then there would be this new class of people. Right, all these
Megapats.
New stratifications of different classes of people.
Oh, you're right. I never considered this. But we got to try it. That's the only way we'll know, through science.
I mean, could be trick. I don't know.
Where would you like to see existence go?
Say that again. What would I like to see?
Where would you like to see the path of existence go? What can you, what do you want to change? What kind of change and everything do you want to see?
Whew, that's such a deep question. That's such a heavy question. I mean,
that's what we get into on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm doing my master's in social work, specifically macro social work.
Which, thank you for that, by the way.
And a lot of people don't know what macro social work is, but it's essentially like, how do we make change happen on a systemic level?
A bigger picture.
A bigger picture, right? Whereas, like, clinical social work, you're dealing one-on-one with people's individual experiences. Micro work. But macro is the complete opposite, right? Wow. It's like, how do we create change for groups of people to live better, healthier, quality lives?
What's your advice on that? Do you have any, or where are you at? Because I know that, like, you don't have the answers, but you have your answers.
I don't have all the answers. I have a suspicion that it starts with connecting with one another.
Yeah, right? I agree.
That's how a lot of our problems are solved, is sharing our experiences, connecting with each other, validating each other's experiences, and not...
Deflecting.
Not deflecting, but not minimizing, and also not making our experiences more important than someone else's, mm-hmm. right? Because our own reality is our truth.
Yeah.
And we don't know anyone else's truth, and the only way to do that is to live their experience, their yeah. truth. I think that a lot of the violence we see, a lot of the hate we see is due to a lack of inability to connect with ourselves and others and empathize and understand each other. And that, to me, leads down into mental health, right? Like, how do we understand what's going on internally, and how can we communicate better about those things and educate each other yeah. better about those things so that we don't have violence and we don't yeah. have hate happening?
I think education is one of the most important parts of activism.
It is. It really is. But also, how do you get people to care?
Yes.
About something yes. that doesn't impact or affect them.
Yeah.
Or they think that doesn't impact or affect them.
Yeah.
Because we all impact and affect each other on some level.
To the metaphysical level. But people don't believe that.
People don't
that.
See that.
Yeah.
Right. But then also, how do you take care of yourself, and how do you teach people to take care of themselves and do self-care, right? Because you can't care 24/7. Like, you yeah. have to take breaks. You yeah. have to take
rest is
intentional
so
breaks for your mental health. And when you do that, you're able to do so much more. You're able to create other things. You're able to go beyond just the surviving, just the...
The self. Yeah. You have to learn to become selfless. Would you mind if we moved over there? Because that guy's playing music. I don't want to copyright stuff. Keep listening, y'all. We're moving. And so now we're walking to another table. You can't see this, but it's pretty close. I would say about 20 feet, you would say?
Yeah.
20, 30 feet.
This
table, oh my gosh, it has seen some shit.
This table has some history.
All right, sorry about that. I just don't want to get strike down, like I have to take down the episode because there's music playing in the background. All right, sorry, where were we?
So what I guess what I would like to see happen in existence is... mental health access and support for all people.
Yes.
Not just the privileged.
Yes.
I think it's so important. And I think once we start to understand our mental health, we're able to overcome some of the obstacles that keep us from connecting with each other.
Yes. And I know it sounds silly to say or to even propose, but I think that mental health expands beyond humans. Like, I think that, like, eventually in the next, let's say 50 years, we're going to start seeing AI rights, and because or how people are opposed to that, you know, to treating AI just like slavery, you know, or anything. But also animal health, animal mental health. I think that, like, the further that we connect into these things, I think some humans, you know, it's all about humans. It's all about humanity and all about projecting humanity on everything. Even God, you know, people think God is this human or this man, you know, which I would describe God as the funk, as funk. And so just that these, we're not done here with just us, but I think that is the focus that we need to be on first before we can get into those other areas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, connecting with our environment, right? It's like people have such a hard time connecting with themselves first.
Yes.
That you can't connect with anything else if you don't know how to connect with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, first you have to know how to connect with yourself, and then you can connect with others, and then from there you can connect with the environment, you can connect with animals, you can connect with everything, right? Because everything is energy, everything has a vibration.
Yeah.
And we are energy and vibration.
Yes.
So we have the ability to connect with everything.
Yeah. Because, like I said, we are all literally just units of funk, and we're just our own individual perceptions of it, you know. And it's important to have individuality because we are teaching existence what it is like for us to be where we are, like for you and I to sit at this moment, or whoever's listening, for them to be listening. That is so important because it gets us to the next step in the future.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you something, but
I'm really digging this lighting.
Yeah,
it's like moody and like overcast a little, but like there's glow coming from over there,
and the wind is blowing. It's super nice.
Just got like 5 degrees cooler.
Yeah, it did. I felt that drop almost instantaneously. Oh my gosh, but it looks like it's about to rain or something, maybe.
Yeah.
Jeez. Y'all can't see this if you're listening, but the sky is like super gray, like a little
super
bit.
Gray on one side, and then it's like bright on the other side.
Dang it, what was I gonna ask you? How do you feel that we best reach these connections? What do you suggest to someone who's listening, you know, or what would you suggest to anyone?
I think tapping into our vulnerability.
Yes.
Is the best way to connect.
It's so hard for some people because then you're holding yourself accountable.
It is. I mean, it also requires a level of like accepting that I'm flawed and then communicating those flaws.
Yeah.
And those vulnerabilities, accepting that I have fears and things that are scary, and communicating those things to other people. And in our capitalistic society, we're taught to just be our best, present our best, because it's the thing that's going to make us successful.
Yeah, right. If you show that vulnerability, you're no longer a leader. You're no longer a capitalistic leader. I would say that the best leaders are the ones who are vulnerable.
Right.
Is it about to, like, storm?
I think so.
Wow.
Do I need to move again?
Yeah, you want
to
start walking back or something? I'm actually going to hit pause.
Okay.
Hey, welcome back. We're in V's porch now.
Moving around a lot.
It might be raining or something. This is the effects of outside. When you're in reality, you have to deal with weather.
You got to adapt.
Yes. Where were we, though? What were we talking about?
We were talking about
how to build community, how to seek out.
Yeah. Vulnerability, right? I was talking about how vulnerability, I think, is the way to be able to connect with one another. And, right, we can only really study and advocate for mental health the more people are able to let their guard down and share their mental health challenges.
Yeah.
Right? Because if no one's talking about their mental health challenges,
then you can't get better.
Then there's no need to advocate for it.
Yeah. I guess the hardest part for a lot of people is, like, the whole stigma of, like, you do this, and then someone starts judging you for that, you know? It's like,
yeah.
You have one mental thing, you open up your vulnerability, and then it's kind of put back down into your throat, you know, or it makes things worse. And so it's
right.
like, some people don't talk about them. And, again, community, if you find the right people to talk
right,
about those
yeah.
things with, then that's the healthier community. For me, my analysis of, like, where to find good communities, like, it's few sometimes, you know? It's really hard for people to find, like, groups that are healthy for them. And I think that's why a lot of people turn to church, because it's almost mm-hmm. a guaranteed community. It's mm-hmm. every Sunday, the same people, you know, coming. They're all at least trying to show an image of being good people, you
right.
know? And so it's people you think you can trust or want to trust.
Right.
But I personally would say improv.
Improv, like, is great.
Without a doubt. I think that it raises some amazing communities and people. It teaches you how to communicate and listen. So when you are in that connection,
mm-hmm.
you can do it better.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think improv has definitely helped me a lot to learn how to have a productive and progressive conversation with someone instead of shutting them down.
Yeah. More yes and.
Yeah.
Rather than no but.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, after I started studying improv, so I've done improv 6 years now, almost seven, maybe seven, and you really do see the difference of just like, how so many just your regular person just doesn't know how to listen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's eye-opening. Again, that's why I think that, like, the next step would be brain-to-brain communication, you know?
But then I feel like we wouldn't need language anymore.
Why do we need language now?
Well,
except for communication.
Yeah,
you know?
This is true. I mean, I say, you know, when we talk about gender and sexuality, right, the debate, there's some debates in some queer circles where it's like, you know, if you say gender and sexuality are a spectrum, then it invalidates my identity of gender and sexuality.
Yeah.
And it's like, but everything is a construct.
Yeah.
Language is a construct.
Yeah. And especially to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you go into space, sound is a vacuum. Like, sound,
mm-hmm.
We have the exact atmosphere for sound to even exist. And so that's why I think sound is such a special thing, and why,
mm-hmm.
like, we literally are moved by it, because
right.
I mean, we are formed through vibrations. I think that, so, do you know the story of the Tower of Babel?
Yes.
So, metaphorically, like, let's say the Tower of Babel was a thing. Like, it actually happened. These people were building these towers in the heavens, and then...
What are you trying to say didn't happen?
I mean, I think a lot of biblical stories are metaphors,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And then they're, as far as translation, you know, the years go by, and then we think that they mean something else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, so, let's say, theoretically, the Tower of Babel happened, and then they're building this tower, and then they get too close to the heavens, and God is like, oh, no, sorry, y'all. And then he divides all these people by making
mm-hmm.
them each speak their own separate language.
Right.
So none of them can understand each other. And so now thousands of years have passed with
uh-huh.
people working together, or at least attempting to. And now, with the help of technology, we had translation apps. So,
yeah.
like, we could just talk with those people that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, who's to say that we don't make another attempt to reach the heavens? And who's
right.
to say that, like, we haven't done that already?
I think we are attempting to reach the heavens, right? Isn't
yeah.
that why we're leaving Earth?
Oh, yeah. Seeing Mars and all those other
right.
places and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is still just, like, the tip of the iceberg, because the observed universe that we know, we would never reach it in any of our lifetimes.
Never.
Even if we were traveling the speed of light for infinity, we would never see the end of what, of only what we know.
Right.
And there's more beyond
right,
that.
And there's more beyond that, right.
And so it's just like, and that right there is like, that all exists within something, and that's what I call the fun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And then that's forever expanding. If there's anything ever that's outside of the funk, that's also still fun.
Outside
and inside.
But honestly, I mean, I think that's what the heavens is.
Go on.
Is that which we don't know.
Yeah.
That we will never be able to ever explore or experience.
At least in this life.
And
in
my lifetime, in the lifetime of humans as we know they exist now.
Yeah. I was telling a previous podcast guest, about, what are these called? Your cleft or your upper lip thing. That's essentially when you're coming into the world and being born, the heavens basically tell you to shh. And it basically imprints that onto your...
Oh, wow.
And so you can't tell the secrets once you're alive. But again, it's like, if we are really all metaphysically to a level, the same experience, the funk, essentially, who's to say that we can't tap into that? You know, like, who's to say that if we amplify now, like, again, the Big Bang was approximately 18.3 billion years ago. Who's to say that we don't multiply that by 2 or 3 or 5? And even if humans die out, some other creature or being evolves to essentially be able to do anything or everything. Bless you. Bless you. Oh my gosh.
It's always three.
I'm in 2 to 5.
I'm always three.
Mine increases every few years.
That's funny. Mine's always been 3. I don't know why.
3 is a magic number.
I like things in 3s.
3's best for comedy.
It is best for comedy.
The triangle is the strongest shape.
It is?
Yeah.
It's not the circle?
No. The circle can collapse if you put too much weight on one side. But a triangle, since each side is basically supported by another angle on the other side, it's one of the strongest shapes there is.
Okay. I had a thought while you were talking about, you know, the constant search for what's out there, and we've essentially built a whole industry around exploring the outer space, but I feel like this generation is doing a pretty good job of, like, exploring our inner space.
Yeah.
And
which
how,
is more important.
Which is more important and, you know, is also full of magic and mystery. Yeah. And it's readily available to us.
Because I would say, let's say that we do find another intelligent species. First off, I don't think it's going to be anything humanoid. Like, it's not going to walk on 2 legs, have 2 eyes, you know. It's going to be something that we maybe can't even understand or interpret.
Mm-hmm.
How can we even expect to communicate with these things if we can't communicate with each other?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It seems like an almost impossible task.
Yeah.
I keep losing my train of thought. So much stimulus. Dang it. I don't know. Did you hear? And I don't know how true this is. So all the SpaceX work, you know, Elon Musk building all these rockets that are doing some pretty cool things, being able to land standing up and everything. But apparently, it's come to the surface that most of this hasn't been about space exploration at all, but how to quickly transport mass weapons.
I believe it.
Yeah. And so instead of, because they use submarines now, and so it's like, it's a safer way because you're up in space, less people can reach you, you know, and so you can just send your nuclear bombs across the planet in a few minutes.
And if they blow up, they blow up in outer space.
Yeah.
I mean, capitalism, you know, it really makes us do some crazy shit.
Yeah. In schizoanalysis, so psychoanalysis is the study of the human mind, and schizoanalysis is why that is. It seems that, like, most of the research on schizoanalysis shows that capitalism was one of the most harmful things to humans, like, period. I saw a video the other day that was talking about, like, the concept of a leptocracy. And so what that is essentially, like, instead of choosing a leader democratically, you choose one at random. And you literally just, like, you get your average Joe Schmo or anyone, and then you just have the entire environment raising these people up and teaching them how to be a good leader, you know? And you could even do it in advance. Like, you can pick the next 100 years of people, and then you just put them all into some leadership training school, you know, to, like, be there for the world.
Aren't there countries now that kind of do something similar to where everyone has the ability to participate in civil service.
That sounds much
healthier.
There are
some countries, yeah. It's like, you know, and you serve for 2 years, like your name gets pulled and you get asked where do you want to serve, and you serve, and for 2 years you're dedicated to doing that job.
And that's so perfect, because then you get more experience from anyone, you know, and everyone. Because in this video, he was discussing planned obsolescence. And so, like, even though it sucks, even though we are basically being forced to, like, buy new products almost every other year and stuff, apparently without planned obsolescence, things would just go into chaos or whatever. Or I can't remember the full benefits of it. But without having sudden change, and again, this autocracy of just, like, putting it into a random event, like, those seem to be the most beneficial moments of just, like, because you don't get too far on one extreme or the next, you just change to another thing completely, and then it's up to that person and that group of people to, like, kind of just make different thoughts. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, only Republicans or only Democrats choosing these things, you get, like, a random person, you know, and you get their views.
Mm. Yeah, I think you know, civil servants and public service should really include everyone from the public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't, because it's more about control, and it's more about discrimination. Like, people who've been to jail, it's like, they can no longer vote or anything, you know, so what do we do with those people? What do they do, you know? Just go back to jail?
They should be able to vote.
Yeah,
Exactly. Is what should happen.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. I want to do all these things. Like, I want to address these issues, but it seems like there's just such opposition to them.
There is, but I think it's a generational perspective as well. And I think once certain people have transitioned into the next life, there will be more room for different perspectives to kind of shape different systems that are not oppressive and that are inclusive.
Yeah. Kind of just enjoying this weather, really.
Yeah, it's nice. I was not expecting this.
Lovely China. Yeah, me neither. Though I don't check the weather until, like,
it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except when I go to work now. It's like, I gotta check the weather, because the Minot floods so easily, so it's like, if it starts pouring and my lunch is in my car, and then you don't get a lunch.
I just noticed this spider web right here.
Oh yeah, I was looking at that earlier.
I don't know if it's gonna hold up with the wind.
It should. Spider web's pretty strong. Hmm. What about the webs that humans create?
Oh, I mean, that's supposed to be your support network.
Supposed
to be.
Yeah.
But I think some people probably create webs of lies.
Yeah.
And webs of deceit. Yeah. And webs of drama and that aren't as healthy.
And it sucks, because it's like, those are the things that get the most remembered. Like, they have the most effect, unfortunately. You know, like, you never remember all the good moments. You remember those terrible bad moments, you know.
Or the moments that happened because of oppression or injustice.
Yeah. And there's so little tales of, you know, going against that. Or like, I would say winning, you know, or making progress. Because, like, even if you make that one win, there's still the next obstacle, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, there's no great stories of,
well,
like that.
Well, and then, but, I mean, if you think about it, capitalism exists to solve problems, right? And I put that in air quotes.
What the hell was that?
I think it was something over at the high school. The soccer field.
But yeah, so, like, feeding off of that, capitalism is supposed to solve things. We can literally look at the planet and, like, see where capitalism, you know, white capitalism has come into like almost every country that like, you know, was without the U.S. before. And then they come in and they're like, hey, we're going to, you know, like, let's take Japan, for example. After World War II, it's like after they destroyed Japan, America was like, yo, we got your back. We're going to do capitalism. We're going to basically like upgrade your entire economy. And it worked for a little bit. Like the profits skyrocketed. You know, they always do. Capitalism does work in that extent. But then everything just after a few years went to absolute shit because of capitalism.
Yeah.
It's too powerful. And then it just becomes this like the puppeteer, you know? Like,
Yeah, for capitalism to work, there has to be someone that takes the brunt of it.
And checks and balances. Yeah. And that's what we're seeing is that, like, it's not being checked or balanced. I mean, it's being checked in some ways, but it's not being balanced at all. And,
yeah, like, I mean, it's being checked to benefit those it benefits.
Yes. Yeah, they're finding what's the next loophole we can do to, you know, make more profits and not care about each other. Which sucks, because it's like, literally, if we were just, like, helping each other out, like, literally, if we took all the, you know, we tax billionaires, and we took all the money that we could, not all the money, but, like, you tax them just a little bit amount, you could pay for the planet. You could pay for the whole planet.
Yep.
But for some reason, we can't forcefully, you know, do these things, even though they have in the past.
Yeah.
They're just not willing to do it now because those people are too far in charge.
Yeah, they're too powerful.
Yeah.
They have too much money, and money solves problems.
Yes. No matter if it's wrong or right.
Right.
Money speaks. Money talks.
Right, right. And that's what capitalism has done, though, as a result. It, like, capitalism needs money and upholds money.
Yeah.
And so, it's like a vicious cycle of producing money and upholding money.
And it, what I really would like to see first happen is a Medicare for all. So I haven't had insurance for like the last 9 years or whatever. I think I saw a doctor in 2012, and then I didn't for a long time because I didn't have insurance. And now that I have insurance at the nil, I'm getting all these issues, you know, all these things are coming up, which I kind of expected, not seeing a doctor for so long. But what makes me so mad is the last time I went, I had to give a blood sample. They took one blood sample. It's $50. That's with insurance.
And that's your blood.
Yeah, right? It's like...
it's your blood.
And that $50, I make $11 an hour. That's 5 hours that I have to work for me to give my own blood to be studied and examined.
Right,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so the people who don't even have that, it's like, you're up shit creek. It's like, who cares?
Yep.
I care. I care so much, damn it. But like...
yeah, it's unfair. It really is.
And the only way is to, like, get someone in the position of power to, like, do these things. But again, with capitalism and with people who have so much money, it's moot.
Huh.
Like, you can't get these people. Like, look at, I know some people don't like him, but Bernie Sanders. Like, I think he would have brought good change, you know. And, yeah, he would have had bad moments. I'm sure he would have failed. But we all fail to succeed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But he got thrown under the bus because he was opposing the people with the money. And they used that money to basically just... Twice.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that's made capitalism so successful in our lives is that, is privatization.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing, I'm reading a book right now that speaks about, how privatization breeds racism.
Yes.
And inequality.
Yes.
You know, and it specifically gave the example of the privatization of pools, swimming pools, because before swimming pools were private and a luxury thing, they were created to combat segregation. They were created to bring people of all races together.
Like, wow.
It was the meeting place where all people could be safe, treated equally. But then a lot of these pools were in neighborhoods that were predominantly white, and so...
I bet that's where the country club came from.
Yes, and so once the pools shut down, country clubs started to pop up that were privately owned and for white people, predominantly of a certain class.
Jesus Christ. White people ruin so much for the planet.
Yes. Like,
and I feel bad as a white person. Like, and so that's why I try to do as much as I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I learned the other day, Haiti, in like the 1800s, was one of the first countries that were like, anyone who steps foot in Haiti is a free person. Like, it doesn't matter your race, your gender, anything. You're free. And the entire planet turned against them. Like, everyone just, like, cut off their trade ports and everything, and they're like, how dare you be such a good person in such a good country, you know?
Right.
Like, and that's... That was in the 1800s!
Yeah!
You know? It's even worse now. Like, if someone were to try to do that, like... I don't even know. So what do we do? What do we do?
I mean, I think it's important to keep having these conversations.
Yeah, I agree.
But I also, it's like, I know some people hate doing this, but it's like taking inventory of your life. And by life, I mean your morals, your values, your beliefs, and then how your consumer habits align with those morals, values, and beliefs.
It's privilege. It's like, it is upsetting every time I'm like trying to kind of get into, because I like getting deep into conversations. And having these types of conversations. And there's people who are just completely against it.
Right. They just want, deflect everything. They just want surface conversations. Yeah. I was having lunch today with a friend. And I was just so, like... I was trying to, you know, just turn my brain off, right? Because I'm constantly thinking about, you know, how I can be a better human.
Yeah.
And, like, for my fellow humans and fellow life on Earth. And, they, you know, their conversation was just, like... I was having such a hard time being present and just enjoying myself because I was like, this is so surface level.
Yeah. It's like, oh, did you try that new thing at Starbucks? It's like, you know, there's people in cages. But, and then when you try to tell these people, it's usually the same people. You try to explain to them what's happening and like their level of privilege and that it's a privilege to be able to do that. And they just completely deflect it. And they just cannot see it. They literally cannot see it. And so it's just like...
Or there's just no care.
Yeah.
They're just like, and?
Yeah.
It's like, shit.
Right?
I hope you never fall off of your throne.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Like, how do you even respond to that, you know? Like, and I think that's where, like... So with cancel culture, it's like... Yeah, people will isolate those people or avoid those people. Like, eventually it's like, okay, I don't want to talk to these people anymore because they're just in their own world. It's all selfishness, you know. But at the same time, it's like, once you isolate those people or you cut them out of your lives, they just get worse. Their bubble gets either smaller or bigger, you know, and they just reflect themselves to the point that it becomes, you know, a mass shooting or something, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think, like, we need to... focus more on accountability culture rather than cancel culture.
Well, and that's what cancel culture was.
Was, exactly. Yeah, I talked about this with Meredith yesterday.
An accountability culture, but...
Outrage
culture.
But
people now have completely missed the accountability step and just immediately jump to cancel culture.
Yeah.
And that's not what cancel culture is.
Because they're afraid of being held accountable themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hold yourself accountable, y'all. If you're listening, be accountable.
Check yourselves. Check your friends. Check the people you care for. And there's a way to do it, right? There's a way to do it that's not vicious.
Yeah.
And cold.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, it's like lifting weights. It's like, it feels weird at first, but you get better at doing it over time. And even if you're like, even if you hold someone accountable incorrectly, it's still better than not, you know?
Right.
It's still better than not saying anything, you know? And then again, you see the people who really need the work and who really don't, and then you really find who you should be hanging out
right.
with, you know?
I also think a lot of people are afraid of holding others accountable because they don't have the language or
yes.
they don't know how.
Yes.
And I think just acknowledging that is better than nothing.
Yeah.
Being like, hey, I don't really know, like, how to talk about this thing that you did the other day, but it made me feel really uncomfortable. And I'm wondering if what your thoughts are about that,
yeah.
or has anyone else told you they feel uncomfortable yeah. about that?
And then you hope for the best.
And then you have a conversation around yeah. that, right?
So it's kind of teleology to explain a phenomenon to someone. It's like, hey, I experienced this thing. Let's talk about it, you know, and see your view, because it's going to be different, you know, but it should still be discussed, because that's how you learn epistemic knowledge, like by explaining phenomenon and understanding it together.
Right, and that is accountability.
Yeah.
That's how accountability happens.
Yeah.
Now, if the person is in constant denial and is very vicious and violent towards you.
Yes.
Then that's when you can consider cancel culture.
Yes.
When you can consider being like, okay, look, I've tried to have conversations with you. You keep throwing things at my head when I come at you. This is not okay.
Yeah.
You need to stop, or I'm going to stop hanging out
yeah.
with you. I can't keep putting myself in harm's way just so that, you know, you don't feel like you're doing something wrong.
And what sucks is, like, once you finally get to that point, it still doesn't care. It still doesn't matter to them, you know? They're still so selfish that it's just like, cool, I'll find someone else, you know? Like, or they'll just hang out alone.
Well, and then the hope in the canceling part, right, is that they notice or they see the loss of you in their life.
Yeah. You hope.
And that's the hope, and that they begin to reflect.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, well, why did they leave? Why are they no longer in my life?
Yeah.
What was because of this thing that they tried to get me to understand so many times, and I didn't think it was toxic or unhealthy, but now everyone in my life is also saying they have an issue with this.
Yeah.
Maybe I need some changes to happen.
And that's the hopes. But it
yeah.
seems that, like, with so many people who are in that situation, they can't even see it. Like, you know,
yeah.
like, they're literally like, it's not my problem. Like,
right.
I didn't do anything wrong. What did they do wrong? Like, what, you know?
Right. And then I think also when it comes to cancel culture, there comes a point in time where you're like, okay, now it's come down to my physical safety, my
yes.
emotional safety. And of course you should be choosing yourself.
Yeah.
To be kept safe.
Yeah.
That's when cancel culture happens.
Yeah. I wonder what'll be next. What society's gonna give us in the next 5 years even, you know.
Like, I mean, cancel culture has been around for a really long time. I just think language has
evolved.
Presented
yeah.
it as different things throughout
yeah.
history.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like, and during the Aztecas, it was, in indigenous tribes, it was, like, human sacrifices, right? Like, it was, like, all kinds of different ceremonies. If someone stepped out of the community bounds and guidelines, like, they had to, you know, be accountable for
yeah.
it.
Or you were excommunicated.
Right.
Yeah. Canceled culture.
You were
yeah. super canceled.
Well, and I brought this up on Facebook a while back, but I was like, the people who are the most against, who are most anti-cancel culture are pro-prison. And prison is the ultimate cancel culture.
Yeah.
Because you go to prison,
yeah,
you're fucked.
They're canceled.
You're
canceled.
You can't do anything.
Yeah. And then you come out 10 years later and the world is completely different and you can't,
and
you know,
can't
survive.
And you can't participate
yeah.
in it. Like, that is the ultimate cancel culture. And
yeah.
so these people, they're like, oh, cancel culture, this, and they're anti it, but they're so pro-prison.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not see that is also cancel culture?
It's such a, what's the word? It's not my problem kind of thing. It's like, oh.
As long as it's not happening to me.
Yes.
It's not okay.
Yeah.
Or it is okay or whatever, you know. It's until it's happening, until people live the experience, then they're able to be enraged about it.
Yeah. And that's privilege.
Yep. Definitely is.
What are some What are, like, some deep thoughts that you have all the time? Like, a lot.
I mean, recently I've been thinking a lot about, like, my Indigenous roots and how differently our world would look like if colonialism didn't happen.
Yeah. I'm super curious about that as well.
I would love to see what that world looks like.
Yeah. Like, because colonialism really painted such a bad picture for all these Indigenous tribes that they were, like, uncivilized, you know, but they were just their own thing. They were civilized in their own way.
In their own definitions, they were functioning just as they wanted to.
Yeah, and they were more in touch with the planet and the communities and each other, rather than this for-profit colonialization. You know, of taking all this land and all this money and trying to reach the heavens that way, rather than internally.
Right.
You know, and so yeah, I'm also super curious about that. Because it's just like Christianity, you know, it's such a, like, so many people in America are Christians just because it was a colonized thing. Like, it was forced upon most of the world, and it is still affecting most of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell a Christian that, and it's just like, it's so upsetting to them.
Right, they can't believe it. They can't believe that was the truth, that it was forced upon people.
And I look at the character Jesus as a huge metaphor for, like, You can be the ultimate person, or the best, you know, like, let's say best, like, morally. You can be Jesus, right? And you will still be crucified for that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, even then that's going to happen and you're going to be crucified. What makes Jesus so special was that he just did it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you have to also be like Jesus, you know, in that way. Like, no matter, even if you are going to be persecuted for doing the right thing, you do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take those repercussions.
Right.
With a smile on your face.
But that's not what capitalism teaches us.
Exactly.
Because now you have Christianity and capitalism
hand in
defining
hand.
What we should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fear of hell and the fear of doing anything, like sins, you know? Like,
right.
Can't be gay, you can't do all these things, and it's crazy. And that's another reason why I'm trying to expand this idea of the funk, because it's something that's non-religious. It's
mm-hmm.
almost scientific, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't say scientific because I can't scientifically test these things, but it's theoretical.
You just need to go get your PhD.
That's what I'd like to do, but it's expensive, and I also have
imposter
syndrome.
Well, PhD pays you.
Yeah, once you get that far.
Any PhD, most PhD programs pay you, so.
I just need to do it. And also, for me, at least, it's everything that I enjoy is so broad. Like, music, art, philosophy, physics, all these things. And it's just like, I don't know what I would focus on, you know? Because you have to have a focus. You have to have this one single focus.
Yeah.
But I want my focus to be the funk, which is literally the biggest all-encapsulating thing.
I don't know, maybe it's, you know, maybe your PhD is the intersection of everything.
And how do you do that? You know, like... Bless you. Freeze your charm.
How do you do what?
I don't remember.
I said that your PhD should probably just be focused on the intersection of everything.
Yeah, can you do that? Like...
Yeah.
Would
you just have to put it in a nice thesis form.
Wow. I wonder what... And then it goes into picking school. I would personally like to go to school outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think the schools outside are...
Well, and I think that if you do a PhD program outside of the U.S., you'd be able to present your thesis in a way that isn't academically traditional to the U.S.
Yeah. And I think that U.S. traditions are almost halting progress to the entire planet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, academia and higher education is a fucking joke.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're profiting so much money. Unfortunately, my master's program I haven't really learned anything new.
Yeah. And it's just a piece of paper.
And it's a piece of paper, and I'm paying $30,000 for this degree, but it's what capitalism has done.
Yeah. And personally for me, it's really upsetting when, like, I know that I have the experience to do a job or something like that, or be a leader. Like, through Drawbook, I've, like, met over 13,000 people, almost, you know, mm-hmm. or thousands of people, mm-hmm. and communicated, you know, and I have all this hands-on experience with people, and I want to use that, you know, but that doesn't show on a resume, mm-hmm. you know. I didn't pay for this thing, I didn't go to college, and every time it's like I'm trying to apply for a position that I think that I would do well in, that comes in the way. It's like, whoa, where'd you graduate from college, or, you know, what's your degree? And it's like, oh, I didn't finish because I didn't want to be an actor, you know, or...
Right.
And so now it's like a lot of the friends that I saw in the acting world, only 3 of them are, like, acting, you know, that graduated. And so it's just all that.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where academia is going to be in the next, maybe like 20 years.
Yeah.
Because I think it's still a part of capitalism in a large way.
And they're not going to give it away for free. I mean, that's the best thing that they should do, but they're not, because of the profits and the numbers and what shows on paper. Right. And that's all they're focused on, is like what shows on paper.
Yeah, I mean, my whole point for doing this master's program is because I had the hopes that I was going to be intellectually challenged and stimulated in a way that I don't get for free. But
it seems that you can get that stimulation for free, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
And not in a college. You can just get it online or in a book, you know. We need a better way to show those credentials. Like once there is a chip inside all of us or something like that, it's like you read a book and it saves the points. It's like you gain 2 points, you know, like you show some of your resumes. Like, oh, you read that book? Wow. Right.
But no testing.
Yeah.
Because testing is such an ableist thing.
Yeah. Your cat is a parkour activist.
She is very social. She's like, look at me, I'm rolling around. Hey, no. Don't eat it. No.
Oh, well, this second part went faster than I thought.
Oh, yeah?
We're probably wrapping up by the end. You have any last thoughts or anything?
Spend less time in outer space and more time in your inner space.
Dang, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
All right, y'all. So be present, and thanks for being here. V, you got any plugs before we go?
Find me on Instagram, HeyVOK, 2 E's. Stay safe, stay present. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks for listening, y'all. Love you.